at 6 o'clock in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean. Pleasant evening to you. I'm Greg Stensili, and welcome to another edition of the Better Health Radio Show, hosted by none other than Dr. Renee Boyce. She's right here on this Valentine's Day, not in red, but she is here nonetheless. Very good evening to you, Dr. Boyce.
Hi, good evening, Greg. How are you?
Well, I'm not too bad on this special day. How about yourself?
I am pretty okay. I was looking forward to hearing what it was that you would have been saying for Valentine's Day, but I didn't get the opportunity to hear any before the start of the show. I'll probably tune in after and see if I can hear a few relevant tunes.
I hear you, Doc. I hear you.
How are you? Are you hearing me clear? Because I'm hearing
I'm getting a little bit of... Yes, I can hear that as well, too. A little bit of interference. Let's hope it clears up as we proceed.
Okay, well, we'll see what happens. Good evening to everybody, and welcome again to another edition of the Better Health Radio Show, where we help you to live your best life. And we want to welcome you to what's going to be a very exciting show. There is going to be a wealth of information from our panel. Like I said, this evening, you're going to be overwhelmed with the estrogen because I have three female guests.
All right, Doc, let me just stop you 1 second. I am really having the interference that you were speaking of earlier. So what I want you to do for me is to log off and then log right back on, and we'll see if that clears up a bit. And whilst you're doing that, we're going to enjoy a little interlude from Kenny G. So log off and then come right back to me, okay? All righty, so let's start taking Kenny Rogers. Did I say Kenny Rogers? Kenny G. Let's take some Kenny G. As the good doctor departs and then comes back in, hopefully we'll get a better reception when she gets back. Okay, I think the good doctor's back. Let's find out if the reception is any better. Good evening, Doc. Can you hear me?
Hi, Gretchen. I'm hearing you. How's that?
Much better in terms of the noise. Well, let's go ahead. Let's see if we can get through this.
Okay, well, I am hearing you lovely and clearly. I'm hoping that the same is going on your end.
Yeah, you go ahead some more. I don't want to say yes just yet. Go ahead, continue.
Oh, dear. I don't know that there's anything else I can fix.
Yeah, you're freezing a bit.
End.
Yeah, yeah. But nonetheless, you go ahead.
Let me introduce my guest this evening. First of all, I would like to welcome Dr. Don Scantleberry. We've had Don on the show before discussing cardiac issues, and you're going to see why she's on this evening as well. And we also have Dr. Anne-Marie Cruikshank and Mrs. Francine Charles, a name that is well known in many Barbadian and regional households as well. So good evening to you ladies, and welcome to the show this evening.
Hi, good evening. Good evening, Renee.
Yes.
Good evening to you.
Yes, one of the things that I am very excited about is that I know each of these ladies. I've interacted with them in various aspects of my career and so on, and it has always been a pleasure interacting with each of them. If you got the opportunity to meet them and know them, you would really understand what I was talking about. So remember, those of you who want to call in with your questions, 434-1790, that's the number in the studio. And for those of you who are a little more shy or you have lengthy questions, you can probably send us a WhatsApp, 266-4862. So we will begin with you this evening, Dr. Scantleberry. What's so special about today and those people who are involved with heart health? What's the significance of today?
So this week is Cardiac Rehab Week. Actually, there's so many things going on this month. So in the United States, this is Heart Month. This is the month that they're celebrating all things heart. There is the Go Red for Women campaign that they're celebrating this month. And for the Heart and Stroke Foundation, Cardiac Rehab Week is this week from today till the 20th of February. So we just wanted to mark the day and mark the week by having a discussion about exactly what's cardiac rehab, what's the role of the heart and stroke in the prevention of cardiovascular disease. And as I was thinking about it, I thought, well, it's not just about rehab, it's also about primary prevention through prevention of childhood obesity and its and the subsequent complications that come from obesity, and a secondary prevention through that dreaded complication of a heart attack, which is sudden cardiac death. Of course, sudden cardiac death can occur in other situations as well, dealing with heart disease, but you know, we always think about heart attack. So CPR in the form of basic life support, heart saver for lay people, and advanced cardiac life support is part of the emergency cardiac care program that Dr. Cruikshank will speak about. So we have these three different departments within the heart and stroke. And as well, there's another one that isn't represented, the youth gym, which is led by Professor Anne St. John. And, you know, that also deals with the question of childhood obesity and prevention of childhood obesity. So heart and stroke is all about prevention of cardiovascular disease. And we wanted to have the public understand a little bit more about what we do and our role in Barbadian heart disease and prevention of heart disease in Barbados. Back to you. I can hear you.
Go ahead, Doc. We can hear you. Go ahead.
No, I'm not muted. My connection again.
That's all right. Yeah. We can hear you now.
We can hear you now.
Yeah, I wasn't muted. So, Don, you've nicely summarized for us all of the different organizations that are within the Heart and Stroke Foundation. Briefly, for those of you who do not know, I'm guessing I'm not being partial, but the Heart and Stroke Foundation is just a stone's throw away from the Winston Scott Polyclinic. Is that not true, Dr. Scatterberry?
Literally a stone's throw. You could probably stand up over there and throw a stone and hit heart and stroke.
Yes, so just in case some persons were having challenges in finding the Heart and Stroke Foundation, once you find the Winston Scott Polyclinic, you can easily find the Heart and Stroke Foundation. And the actual address, they are Lady Mead Gardens. There is Lady Mead Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Lady Mead Gardens. So I want to jump into this evening's presentation. You had mentioned Professor Anne St. John, and we take this opportunity to say good evening to Professor St. John. She's not with us this evening, but she certainly is a champion for all things children, having been a pediatrician for longer than I've been alive. And recently she has taken on the championship of childhood obesity prevention. So let's start with you, Mrs. Charles. Exactly what are the aims in the Childhood Obesity Prevention Program?
Thank you, Renny. And it's really good to be on the program with you, see you again, and of course, everyone else. So you mentioned Professor Anne, and I really want to really just identify and really give kudos to Professor Anne and the work that she has done. And she continues to be a very significant support and foundation pillar to the work that we are doing. At this point, the Childhood Obesity Program has, I would say, two main aims, so two main objectives. And one is really to highlight and to educate the public from children right up to the adult stakeholders about the challenges of childhood obesity and why we are taking it so seriously and why even at the global level, it is considered a major challenge because it's specifically to do with its link to the onslaught of non-communicable diseases. And as a result of that, we are doing major education work among all groups and all stakeholders. But the second one is the issue of challenging and advocating for policy. Because what we have found, and at the global level, this has really been at the forefront of the discussion, is that education and behavior change are part of the solution. But a significant part is actually governments signaling and creating environments that make it possible for societies and for people to make healthier choices. And as a result of that, we are advocating significantly for a number of evidence-based policies from the World Health Organization themselves as to what government needs to implement to create better environments, both at the school level and at the national level, so that we can become a healthier nation.
You spoke about policy and taking evidence from the World Health Organization. One of the biggest problems that we have in the Caribbean, and Barbados is not excluded, is the lack of our own research. Because it's quite okay for us to take information from the World Health Organization and PAHO and CDC and try to adapt those things to our situation. But don't you think perhaps that our own evidence would be able to inform our leaders, those decision makers, about better decisions that can be made for our own local situation?
Definitely, Renny. And as a result of that, the work has been ongoing, not just here in Barbados, but across the region. So we know for a fact, based on the work that the Ministry of Health has done through the public health surveys, is that firstly, one in three of our children is considered overweight or obese. Those are our figures. And what we are seeing, we've recently done research here by the Caribbean Health Research Institute. It's a UWE-based organization based in Jamaica, but they also work here with the George Allen Chronic Disease Research Center, which is also a stone's throw away from Heart and Stroke.
From Winston Scott.
And from Winston Scott Polyclinic. And their recent research, which is as early as 2018 into 2019, looked at the school environments, and they saw that about 75% of our children are having more than one sweetened drink a day and sodas a day, when we already know that some of these drinks are carrying 36 grams of added sugars, some of them up to 56 grams. And we know that what is suggested as the maximum intake for a child in one day is 25 grams. So we have that research. We have the research that shows us that children have a minimal access or intake of fruits and vegetables during their school time. And you know that children spend most of their time in school. Yeah. But the figures are showing that their intake of unhealthy foods and drinks are extremely significant and definitely suggesting that our environment is obesogenic, and that we need to do something to bring down that scale. And of course, we have the figures for the NCDs. We know that one in five of our adults, and this is local research, one in five of our adults has diabetes. We know that the figures are showing that if we are not careful, at this point, Barbados is spending, and I think the figures have gone up, but I have a 2010 figure that shows that $209 million Barbados dollars a year we are losing in indirect and indirect costs due to spend at a national level on NCDs. So I think we have the local figures as well, but obviously, as you know, the global data is also very important in guiding us, because you actually see the movement along those figures.
Yeah, we're going to come back to you, Francine, and discuss what some of the outcomes of childhood obesity are, and again, discussing why we want to prevent this scourge. But we're going to jump over now to Dr. Anne-Marie Cruikshank. Welcome again, Doc. For those of you who do not know, Dr. Cruikshank is an accident and emergency physician. She worked there for many years, and the accident and emergency department is a very exciting place medically, and it is only a certain type of physician who can survive the accident and emergency department and do it well. And I do remember as a student watching Dr. Cruikshank being very, very meticulous, very organized, and she has her ruler in her pocket to measure the size of wounds, and it was fascinating to watch. So good evening to you, Dr. Cruikshank.
Hi, Renee. Thank you for having me.
Listen to me, just as softly and as delicately as she sounds now, she sounds in the accident and emergency and wherever else she works. I don't think I've ever heard her shout. I do not think I've ever heard her shout. And I'm not saying that she's a walkover, rest assured. So you're dealing with the ECC component of the Heart and Stroke Foundation. Explain to our listeners what the letters EC and C represent and why this would be important for us here in Barbados.
Okay, so ECC stands for Emergency Cardiac Care, which is part of Heart and Stroke. So Heart and Stroke is it's one of the training centers under the American Heart Association. So we're affiliated with the American Heart, and we teach several emergency cardiac care courses, starting from the laypersons, which is Heart Saver, to advanced, well, basic life support, to advanced life support, to pediatric advanced life support. So we have a gamut of courses which we teach to all types of persons in healthcare professionals, in healthcare settings, or laypersons.
So why would it be important, you think, for the average individual? And when we say average, we are not talking about the educational level, but we're speaking about persons who don't have that medical knowledge. Why would it be important for Joe Brown, who lives in Christchurch, to know CPR, for example?
Because anyone can just succumb to a cardiac arrest or succumb to a stroke or any type of medical emergency, because we also teach first aid. So we're saying that if we can have a person in each household who knows CPR, who knows first aid, they can administer care immediately until more advanced or more trained professionals can get on the scene, for example, your EMTs and your paramedic. So that saves time, and the life you save could be your own or even your family member. So it's important that we do that training to laypersons and healthcare professionals alike.
Yeah, and when we speak about knowing the right thing to do, I think it's important that persons know what is not the right thing to do in emergency situations. We think about seizures, because you spoke about first aid, for example, and the automatic thing is you're watching somebody have a seizure, for example, and you think, oh, maybe I should put a spoon in their mouth. And those sorts of things you learn in first aid are not the correct things to do. So there is value in the courses which are being offered by the Heart and Stroke Foundation. So some person who wants to become involved in learn the basic life support, for example, or first aid, how would such a person go about becoming involved in one of the courses?
Okay, so we have two types of courses. We have provider courses, which are for students, and then we have courses which are instructor courses for persons who want to become an instructor so that they can teach the life-saving skills to other persons. So you have to do a provider course first, and you have to do well in your provider course. Because we look at several things, your enthusiasm, your knowledge base, your ability to interact with people, etc. So whenever we teach a provider course, we can always single out persons who seem very interested or very dynamic, and then we will put their name forward if they're interested for an instructor course, which we do once a year. We train persons to be Heart Saver, Basic Life, Advanced PALS. Whatever course you wish to become an instructor in, we would do the training for that course. And we teach you, and then we watch you, we monitor you teach at least two courses, and then we roll you out as a full-fledged instructor. We tend to put you with a more senior instructor in the first few courses that you teach, but then after a while, you become quite skilled and you can teach courses on your own. Everything we do, however, is according to the American Heart Association. So it's a standardized course that we teach, both to providers and to instructors.
All right. It seems that we have broken.
It is not a walkover.
Doc, just give me 1 second, Doc. We had a pause there from you for a second. I just used the opportunity to interject a bit to just bring this up, a piece of bad news here for us. Police from the Oystens Police Station are presently conducting on-the-scene investigations into a report of a 27-year-old male found hanging at a residence located at Windy Ridge, Christchurch. Police received the report via telephone about 3:20 p.m. today, Sunday, February 14th, 2021, A patrol went to the residence and confirmed the discovery. So once again, police from the Oystens Police Station are presently conducting on-scene investigations into report of a 27-year-old male found hanging at a residence located at Windy Ridge Christchurch. Police received the report via telephone about 3:20 this afternoon. Today, Sunday, 14th of February, 2021. A patrol went to the residence and confirmed the discovery. You're listening to the Better Health Radio Show. It is 21 minutes after 6 o'clock. I've got the good Dr. Renee Boyce with us. We've got Dr. Cruikshank, Dr. Canterbury, and Francine Charles. All the ladies here with us on this program as we discuss health matters. And before I go back to the good doctor, we want to say good evening to all the rest of the polyclinics, especially that of Eunice Gibson up there in Warren's St. Michael, especially the dispensary section. That crew inside there are very helpful. So thank you kindly for reminding me to mention them, Dr. Boyce. It's all yours.
Yes, and whilst we are saying our hellos, let's go ahead and say hello to all of those frontline workers who are during this time working very, very hard in trying to keep our nation safe at this time. We wish to say thank you. Thank you so very much for working so hard, and we encourage you to continue to go on working. Just before the break, we were discussing with Dr. Cruikshank about the courses that were provided by the Heart and Stroke Foundation with respect to emergency cardiac care. And when we're talking about heart, we're going to get back to Dr. Cruikshank, but when we're talking about heart, you know, we're going to obviously talk to a heart doctor. This is going to be Dr. Scantleberry. And Dr. Scantleberry, she is going to tell us about the cardiac rehabilitation program. What can you tell us about that program, Dr. Scantleberry?
I'll start by describing exactly what cardiac rehabilitation is. So we have someone who has suffered a cardiac event, either a heart attack or stroke, or, well, not necessarily a stroke, that's a different type of rehab, but that's also part of our program. Heart failure, heart surgery, heart valve surgery, a heart stent, anything like that. And rehabilitation is essentially the process by which people get back on their feet. It starts in hospital, that's phase one rehab. As soon as you wake up from heart surgery, or we finish doing our procedure, or you are diagnosed with your heart attack, the process of progressive mobilization in hospital, where the first day you're on bed rest, but by the next day you can sit out and then walk around, that's phase one rehab. Phase two rehab is the central program of our CDPNR program. CDPNR stands for cardiovascular disease prevention and rehabilitation. So that's our phase two rehab, where patients are referred following their event, and they undergo a series of assessments by nurses, very, very extensive assessments. Sometimes it involves up to doing a stress test, depending on their level of risk. We do nutritional assessments, physical examination, fitness assessments, psychological and psychosocial assessments. And then based on that, a program of rehabilitation is prescribed by the medical director that involves exercise. And a lot of people think that cardiac rehab is just exercise, but it's actually a holistic program where we look at the patient's diet, they meet with a nutritionist. If you score high on one of the mental health assessments, then we refer you to a mental health specialist as well. So a lot of patients who sometimes score kind of low or intermediate on some of these scores do very, very well just by undergoing rehab. But if you score particularly high, I will refer you to a mental health specialist. Then, depending on your level of risk, you undergo exercise 2 to 3 days a week. Higher risk patients will be attached to a telemetry system where they're actually hooked up to cardiac monitoring leads, and a nurse monitors their cardiac rhythm as they exercise, monitors their heart rate and keeps them within a certain range. And then every week they progress, so that they are able to increase their exercise capacity. By week four into the second month, weights are added. And sometimes I have patients come back complaining about the weights and the chest fly. And these are sometimes 70-year-old women who have never done a set of weight training in their life, but then they get to enjoy it. And then at the end of the 3 months, we do a repeat assessment to see where they've progressed. That's phase two rehab. Phase three rehab refers to patients who have completed their phase two, but they're now exercising independently. Those are the ones who've had who have heart disease. And phase four is another category where it's more primary prevention. So if you are a patient at polyclinic, for instance, or at your GP's office or whatever, and the GP thinks, well, your BMI is 35, BMI is body mass index, you're obese, you need to lose a little bit of weight, but you're scared to exercise on your own, or you're concerned about going into a gym on your own. We get patients like that referred from their GPs for exercise and nutrition assessment and nutrition counseling. And that's phase four rehab. Another type of rehab that we do is stroke rehab. So it's not that intensive stroke rehab that's administered by a physiotherapist. We don't have registered physiotherapists working with us, where it's really just nurses and a fitness trainer. So what happens after stroke, the patient will go to the physiotherapy department or private physiotherapist or whatever. And once they've gotten to a point where they can exercise independently, often the physiotherapy department, when they discharge them, will refer over to us for them to consolidate. So they're getting now accustomed to exercising and exercising on their own. And it's about establishing those habits of physical fitness and healthy living. So that's our CDPNR in a nutshell.
Okay, so Gretchen, over to you. It's now 6:28 in Barbados and across the Eastern Caribbean.
Yes, indeed. And at this time, we will present to you the Better Health Radio Show tip, which the good doctor, Dr. Boyce, will give you in a second. But let me just advise you that the Better Health Radio Show tip is coming to you with the kind compliments of A.A. Lackeys. Doc?
Falls in the elderly can lead to serious consequences such as bleeds in the head, broken bones, and loss of mobility. Here is how you can reduce those falls in the bathroom. Use anti-skid mats in the tub and on the bathroom floors. Insert handrails in the shower. Use a bench or sturdy chair in the shower. And always be sure that walking aids, if used, are nearby. Keep an eye out and always be ready to assist when needed. There's your tip to reduce falls in the shower in the elderly.
Thank you. That's Dr. Boyce there for you with the AA Lackeys tip.
Your quality of life with AA Lackeys Home Healthcare Solutions. Where comfort, mobility, orthopedic, respiratory, diagnostic, safety, home healthcare made easy. Manage your wellness with expert care from Home Healthcare Solutions.
Come to AA Lackeys at Langens Mall for all of your home healthcare needs.
Home Healthcare Solutions.
And a big thank you to A.A. Lackeys for presenting us that tip there for you, the Better Health Radio Show tip, right here on The Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM. Thank you kindly, Doc. Continue smartly.
So when we'd left off with Francine Charles, thanks a lot, Gregson. When we'd left off with Francine, we were discussing about research and the value of research. And Francine is the one who was heavily involved in the Childhood Obesity Prevention Program. Francine, what I want to ask you now would be, what are some of the consequences? We spoke briefly about the fact that these children can go on later in life to develop chronic diseases themselves. But what are some of the more immediate effects you think are consequences of childhood obesity?
Yeah, thanks a lot. And even as Dr. Canterbury was talking about, you know, the whole issue of the work that we are doing, and I'm in there every day. Well, not now during the pandemic, but before. And there were two things that struck me, because obviously I'm not a part of the medical fraternity, but it's seeing how people's lives are so significantly affected beyond the issue of death, so significantly affected by the onslaught of specific diseases. And then you see that at the youth gym. You see our young people who are clearly struggling with the issues of weight, either into overweight or into obesity. And one of the things that is very clear is that it really affects a number of things on a number of levels. So already we are seeing children now presenting hypertension as early as 13 or 14 years old. That's a significant
issue for any society, especially a small island developing state like ours, because it suggests that their life course will face major challenges. We also, the issues of mental health, they face quite a bit of bullying within the school system because of that. There's also the whole issue of them being able to fully participate in activities and so forth because of the issues of obviously carrying some level of overweight or obesity. So I think it affects children from the very beginning. The fact of the matter is that what it is suggesting in most cases, because in a lot of cases, obesity and overweight are challenged by your lifestyle, by the way you eat and the way you exercise, the way you live. And so it is suggesting to us that children are facing quite a bit of challenges at a time when they're really supposed to be living at their best lives. And as a result of that, if they're also beginning now to present issues of significant NCDs from an earlier age, and then as they move into 20s and 30s, they begin to feel the challenges of non-communicable diseases, it suggests that we do have a major challenge here in Barbados, and of course